36th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name is Kalen Egan.
My name is Dallas Egan.
And Dallas is here with us today to discuss Porky's.
We thought, what an appropriate film to show Kalen's one-year-old son. To teach him how to be a man, to show him proper masculinity.
He has a different point of view on breasts that I thought would be a valuable contribution to the conversation.
Strategic perception of breasts.
Sort of a sustenance.
A culinary angle, if you will, about bosoms.
Yeah.
Good. No, it's good, Dallas.
So he can sort of talk to us through that level. So listen, Porky's, I don't know what we're doing here.
Have you come around to my side of things?
This one's shaking me a little bit.
Welcome to the dark side,
this
my friend.
This one's shaking me a little
it's
bit.
It's a dark place to be.
Now what we're doing here is unearthing things that are rightly buried. It's my guess. I've never seen Porky's.
Same.
Never seen it.
I've never seen it.
Because why so the fuck would I? I'm too young to have ever... Well, I gotta walk that back.
You've seen it.
It's possible. I haven't seen it, but I could have, because there was a time when I was not 10, 11, 12.
When you're
12,
about to enter your burgeoning sexuality.
When my friends and I would go to Blockbuster and very specifically pick films out of their wild comedies section.
Looking for boobs.
Which existed. Yeah. Wild comedies. All it was boobs movies. Yeah. It was revenge. Case in point.
Yeah. Yeah. Dallas loves that.
It was Revenge of the Nerds. Uh-huh. It was Wimps wasn't one of them, which was just a knockoff of Revenge of the Nerds. It was Taking It Off and Taking It All Off. Mm-hmm. And what we would do is we would get one of those VHSs. Screwed was one of them.
Right. Screwed?
I think it was called Screwed.
Ooh, that feels aggressive.
Zapped. You know, we would take one of those movies, which is just an excuse to have supposedly teenage girls, actually early 20s girls, topless. And hide it under a stack of Jim Carrey films, and then my friend's father would rent them all, and we thought we were geniuses.
And he knew.
He had to.
Right. You don't.
He never let on. Yeah. He wasn't like, "Oh, you boys," and screwed. You know?
Yeah. Well, some of those titles. I mean, Taking It Off sounds clear.
Taking It All Off
sounds even more clear.
And he rented them.
But
for us.
I think Zapped.
Thank you,
can get away.
Eric Larson.
Oh, Eric Larson, the writer of Devil in the White City.
Oh my God! I never knew.
And then he for
my
sure knew.
My friend's father was yeah.
He
the
for
writer
sure
of
knew.
Famous historical fiction.
I do think. Let me just rebut. Let me take your role for a moment, whilst you take my role, and say that I think this is an important film to talk about in any podcast dealing with both nostalgia and films, because there is a large period of time that dabbled in the sexual objectification of young women on film, and it is an inextricable part of our filmic history in America, and we must discuss it. We must wrestle with it.
But it's obviously off target for what we've claimed to be doing here.
Oh, but is it more off target than say the Brave Little Toaster or Cocoon?
But those are movies that people loved.
People loved Porky's, right?
I mean, that brings us to something that we were going to raise, which is this Porky's. Okay, well, a couple things. First of all, here's my devil's advocate against myself on Porky's. I actually am excited to watch this for one reason and one reason only, and that is that it is the work of a director named Bob Clark, who I like a lot. He made Black Christmas, which predated Halloween, and is a great slasher film. And essentially, it's a Canadian movie, and it basically started, for real, the slasher boom, because that inspired Halloween, which then inspired everything else. Black Christmas, great movie. He also did A Christmas Story.
Oh.
That's also Bob Clark.
Oh, so the same guy who did Porky's did A Christmas Story?
Yes, sir.
That feels remarkable
and,
to me.
And other things that I can't remember right now. I think he did Murder by Decree, which is the best non-canonical Sherlock Holmes movie, where Sherlock Holmes meets Jack the Ripper. He's awesome. He's great. And he died tragically somewhat recently in a car accident.
He didn't write Porky's.
He did. It's his brain. And as I recall, Porky's is set in the 50s, and it's a riff. It's like his American Graffiti. It's a riff on his high school exploits.
I asked Kalen before we started recording if Porky's is the first salacious high school movie. And we think maybe that's true.
I think basically it is.
But what you're saying now makes me very interested by it, because it sounds like he didn't set out to inspire a trend of salacious teenage boob films, but rather he was making a fun angle on his own life. So I wonder if like this is going to have depth to it that Porky's 2 through 19 doesn't have.
It might, but it's also, it was hated when it came out. People thought this was garbage then. And he...
There might be good jokes in
but
this.
But it is interesting. But here's what I was going to say is that isn't it interesting that this guy essentially, if that's true about the sex comedy thing, basically created a couple of different iconic genres.
Yeah.
And yet he's not particularly well known.
I did
really.
Not know him. I did not know his name. I knew some of his films you've listed.
Yep.
That is crazy. Also, we discovered in just looking at, I looked at the running time of the film. It's an hour 39. And the year... and then it turns out it's from this massive year we keep running into, and it fared very well against some of the other films that we've looked at.
Killed
on
it
this podcast.
Box office wise. I mean, this thing we looked it up and it opened in Colorado, weirdly, and Dallas. In Dallas almost unplugged our system. It opened in Colorado before being in 1981. Before being expanded widely in 1982, but like 6 months or 8 months later or something crazy like that. And it tore it up at the box office. People went to see this thing over and over. Okay. Now, that's another thing that's interesting about this.
Mm.
There's no immediate easy access to like softcore porn.
Yeah,
this is something, oh, sweet. We get to see naked girls.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm going to say about Porky's about naked girls before we get into the box office, which I want to talk about. I think, because obviously naked girls have been in movies before, I think this is Full Frontal, and that was a big deal in a comedy context.
Right. I think my supposition is that you'd obviously seen nudity in films before, but this seems like, in my meager understanding of film, this seems like the first time I would imagine that they put nudity in for the sake of nudity, of saying, hey, this is the point of this. This scene, you know?
Yeah,
we'll couch
which is
it something
and by,
else,
and by
like,
the way, I know that the famous scene is that they peep through a locker room or
that's
showers
cover,
or something.
That's the cover of the book.
So it's nudity, not sex, which is also a sort of maybe a new idea in a certain way. It's not a sexual context exactly.
Right.
It's looking at naked girls.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it has to be intentional, like a wink and a nod to the audience about you're the voyeurs with these kids, right? But maybe it's not. Like maybe there's something deeper we're missing. I am extraordinarily intrigued by the idea that this is a sort of an auteur's version of his own life. And if it's his American Graffiti, he's obviously a talented guy.
Yeah.
So this could be better than I thought. Like I expected to go in and think, okay, cool. This is like looking back at the terrible world we used to live in.
I hope that there is something to look at here on that level.
Oh, hold on, weird phrase.
All right, just get over this cord and then you're free to roam. There you go.
We've been watching Dallas try to surmount a cord that's about 3 inches off, 2 inches off the ground, and just failing, like, miserably.
Look it up. Let's look this up before we even start the movie, because I don't want this to be part of the conversation necessarily once we're talking about the film. So, 1982 box office.
Yeah. So, just for Porky's, which is the screen I was on, 139 hour 39 minutes, box office, the budget was $4 million. It grossed $105 million at the box office in 81/82. So that's crazy. So 1982 box office receipts.
Yeah. And by the way, all that said, as interested as I genuinely am in looking at this, I don't think this is something anybody needs to watch again. That's my expectation going in.
Okay, here we go. This is Box Office Mojo 1982.
Great.
Number one, unsurprisingly, E.T.
Uh-huh.
Number two, Tootsie.
Okay.
Number three, Officer and Gentleman.
Wow.
Number four, Rocky III.
Wow.
Number five, Porky's.
Yep.
So I'm just going to list from here down what Porky's beat out that year. Star Trek II, arguably the best of the Star Treks. 48 Hours, Poltergeist, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, Annie, The Verdict, Gandhi, Rambo First Blood, The Toy, Firefox, Dark Crystal, Conan the Barbarian. Now I'm going to cherry pick some things here. Tron, Friday the 13th Part 3, Sophie's Choice, World According to Garp, Blade Runner, Airplane 2, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Mad Max 2, Road Warrior.
You're telling me that
Raiders
Porky's,
of the Lost Ark.
No, that was a re-release.
Yeah, re-release, 1982.
You're telling me Porky's beat Halloween 3 Season of the Witch?
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I mean, and it goes on. There's amazing, amazing movies.
So it was a huge year, and Porky's, I mean, that list of the top five is fascinating to me because those are certainly, I mean, with the exception of E.T. and one other one you read at the top. You know, Tootsie, sure. I guess some people still watch it. But that those are, do not read as a list of the things that have remained culturally relevant.
48 Hours, Star Trek II, Officer and Gentleman, I think, is still referenced and around. Yeah. Annie.
Well, that was a little bit less interesting than I expected.
Gandhi. Let's keep going. This is exciting.
Oh, God.
Anyway, I just want to say, dude, that we will at some point draw the Dark Crystal, which is surprisingly high in the top 20. And that, it, to me, is one of the reasons this podcast exists.
I thought the Dark Crystal was considered a financial failure.
Just doing well here.
Fascinating.
Yeah, anyway.
All right, so we're going to go watch Porky's. And we debated whether we should watch this on our own or together.
Because of boners.
We settled on together. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to have to honestly report how many times you get aroused.
Me or both of us?
You.
Well, what the... I'm not going to get aroused. Why would I report that?
If you don't report that. Because you were worried about it.
No, I wasn't worried. I was like, we should just plan for it. It'd be so fun.
What? Be a fun plan game. For it?
Yeah, I'd be like, what do we do? I mean, I
what
just...
What do we do?
Yeah.
God, this movie makes me feel real dirty.
Is it the eye contact I'm making?
I mean, I'm just looking at my son.
You've never eye contact more aggressively than right now. Dallas is going to watch Porky's with us, guys. Stay tuned.
No, he is not.
Hi. My name is Mindy. Can I ask you something?
Yeah, sure.
Why do they call you Meat?
I don't know.
Wendy Williams told me I should ask you.
She did, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
Why do they call you Meat? Because you're so big?
Yeah, sorta.
Not sorta. Why?
You really want to know?
Yes.
Okay, come on, I'll show you.
Meat, wait. She's only a freshman.
Yeah, but after this, she'll be an instant senior.
But Meat, listen, if you get suspended again, you'll never get that scholarship to Princeton. Now think about that.
I'm sorry, babe. No cigar. Can't do it.
He won't tell me. Oh, shoot.
I am anxious. I
loved it.
I hope this conversation will be interesting.
That's
where I'm at.
I think it will be interesting, but I don't know. But I don't know what to expect. I don't know. Here's the thing. We said, are we going to sit in the same room and watch it, or are we going to go separate?
Yeah,
we did sit in the same room.
I got
we
zero boners.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I guess if we're reporting,
well, you asked me to report.
I guess if we have to, I was thinking about cutting that part, to be honest with you. But has to stay.
Yeah. You made your bed. You're gonna lie in that bed.
I realized in reflection, like what is this about me that I keep trying to make like sex references or jokes, but
that's not
who I am, and no. I don't like them.
I think you're trying to be a cool guy.
I'm worried about that. I'm trying to be a cool guy.
Yeah, don't be a cool
guy. And I'm confronted with Porky's.
It's like
they better think I'm cool.
If you showed up wearing a fedora and fingerless gloves, I'd be like, Kalen, that doesn't suit you. You'd be like, it's a cool guy thing. That's what you do.
All right, I gotta let that go.
I think maybe as a way of entry into this, there are some things we got right. And there's some things we got wrong about Porky's, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, you want to go about it that way?
I don't know. I'm interested by that.
I want a holistic thought from you.
I am of two minds, as I assume you are also. I am both not as disturbed by the film as I thought I would be, and I'm more intrigued by it than I thought I would be. And then simultaneously, I'm clearly disturbed by the misogyny and sort of 80s style anarchy of it. And I the part I'm interested in specifically that I don't think we sort of touched on in our intro, and the phrase that helped me throughout this whole viewing was, you said it's his American Graffiti, and I was like, oh, that really helps me land where I'm at with this thing and ground it.
Yeah.
That
was a lucky thought for me, honestly, because I didn't know how
Did
much
you said that you'd read that or
true.
Something that he
maybe I don't know
it's so true.
I knew, well, I don't know if I read that, but I knew that he it was about his youth.
It helped me watch this film. I mean, a lot. It helped me think about it later.
Yeah.
So we'll go through the plot in a second, but to me, I am, and you know this about me, I'm very interested in modern masculinity and how it sort of affects and shapes. And looking at this version of what 1982, what some guy thought masculinity was, is, I would say, inarguably interesting, fascinating to me.
Do you, it doesn't, I'm not a person who requires, we've talked about authorial intent before. Mm. I don't need to know what somebody was thinking when they made something. Mm-hmm. But did you find this movie to be deconstructing of a masculine identity in any way? Or do you think it just leaned hard and embraced and celebrated the masculine id?
You know, I think the latter, because of a couple things I can give you specifically.
Hmm.
This, so interestingly, guys, this movie...
I'm conflicted on it, which is obviously why I asked the question.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about it, because maybe I'm wrong. But there's one or two characters that I think push against that idea. Or push towards the latter of your suggestions.
Hmm.
There is this subplot. There are serious subplots in this film. And this is the part that makes me think it's the latter.
The latter, not the former.
Correct.
Okay.
There is a character who is... Two characters who are super racist. One character in the opening scenes uses like the N-word and is talking about these dumb, you know, whatevers, and the South will rise again. Played for comedic effect purely. And then there's a character that comes up later on who legitimately hates Jewish people because his dad does, not played for comedic effect. And a running through line in the film is this character, you know, is constantly attacking and haranguing and harassing this Jewish guy at the school, calling him Jew boy. And I guess for comedic effect, calling him kite. And the Jewish guys say, it's actually kike. You're doing it wrong. Played for semi.
What do you mean you guess for comedic effect?
But like, it's not the way.
Well, that's not comedic. I mean, that's funny, but it's not.
It's a comeuppance moment.
Yeah. Well, it's like we know listening to him, he's dumb and he's getting it wrong. And then the guy, and so it's funny, but it's not like a ha ha.
That's what I said. I played, I suppose, for, you know, because it's not.
It definitely is.
In that scene, in that moment,
it's played for real. It's a real. It's a different kind of laugh, but yeah. It's real.
But
it's
when
a
legit he, laugh. But when he, but when he,
because the line is,
but it raises.
You're
the
not
tension.
Even good at being a bigot.
Yeah,
basically.
but it's that scene is fraught with the threat of violence. So it's
right.
Not like it's super funny. It's like, oh, he's saying that and it's escalating the tension, and there's going to be a fight now.
But can I say something? Just not to cut you off.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I found that to be the case with almost every single joke in the movie. And well, that's where I'm really... I watched this thing... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, let's come back to that. Okay. I think because the humor of it is a whole different...
Okay.
That's a whole different line of thought. Yeah. But the idea that this author, this filmmaker who wrote and directed it, would infuse, you know, a domestic abuse subplot,
right,
a racism subplot, makes me think he's trying to do something a little more, I don't know... smart or have some sort of like I don't know in integrity about the making of this. So this is a real look at what things are really like.
It feels like he watched American Graffiti and said, "This is a bunch of bullshit and fuck this kind of clean, you know, preppy nostalgia, Happy Days nostalgia." Which, you know, I mean, Happy Days didn't exist when American Graffiti came out, but it soon did. And he was like, "I'll show them what it was really like to be a teenage boy
in
the 1950s.
Exactly my reaction to it.
And in some cases he goes overboard, I think intentionally.
Some cases.
Well, you know what I mean. Like he's also like Animal House also exists, so he's also responding to that.
Yeah.
But he, in terms of the reality he depicts, is probably not accurate. but
not.
The mentality I think is
yeah.
Like what this movie does and why I think I like it a lot is, and there are lots of things not to like, trust me, I'm not blanket loving this movie, but it captures a mentality that American Graffiti doesn't aim for. He's looking for like it's like the mind of the teenage male.
No,
it's what the movie is blown up, and but I think incisively, like it's He's calling them shallow, simple-minded, stupid, you know, and obsessed with single-track obsessed. And he also fantasizes about a world in which everyone, like, charmingly wants to fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's actually sort of a utopian vision for all of its sort of darker and more critical sides, it does have this sort of joy of like, what if everybody liked sex?
Well, it's a little bit of male wish fulfillment, and it's a bit, little bit of the opposite of that. And there's undercurrents of darkness interspersed with this idea of like, hey, this girl will probably fuck you. She's into it. Like, just ask her, and she'll go do it. And she's cool with it. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But that's like a male wish fulfillment beat interspersed
with... that's the thing. The one thing, the core of the movie, and we'll talk through the whole plot of it, but the core of the movie is, you know, that we know from the poster is guys peeping on girls in the shower. What I didn't know and wouldn't have been able to tell you is that the girls love it.
Mm-hmm.
They're so into it.
They think it's so funny.
And they think it's hilarious. And like those rascal guys are looking through the holes. They talk to them through like the girls in the shower.
And they know who it is. Like, oh, Jim, what? Yeah.
And the guys look at each other and they're like, they're not leaving. When they know that they're behind the holes, they're amazed that these girls are still standing there.
Well, one of the main characters is like, they like it. They're hot. They're hot for it. Keep saying stuff. They're into this.
Which leads to an insane comic predicament, which I thought was great, which is that, we'll just tell you, the guy is like, they're into it, you say. So first he sticks his tongue through the hole.
As you do.
And the girl's like, haha, I'll put some soap on his tongue. And he's like, oh, I just ate soap. Well, round two. And he puts his hard penis through the hole and then stands there.
Hard penis.
Well, I mean, like, it's
that's
not
the
like
phrase
a wimp.
You went for.
He's like hard.
No,
it's important that
you're anatomically correct in your
important.
Description. But I just feel like hard penis.
Well, I didn't want to say, because I felt self-critical about saying dick again.
I know.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that on the podcast.
Hard
so
penis
he
is
will
so
approve
much worse.
Of hard penis.
Oh, no. He placed his erect member through the hole in the wall.
Yes. And the girls see that and they're like, ah, oh my God. And then he's standing there because now he can't see through the hole because his dick is through it. And then this gym teacher woman comes in, sees it.
Who's named Beulah Ballbreaker.
We'll get to that. But she sees that his dick is through the hole, and his other friends, because they love pranks and they love getting each other in trouble, are like, oh, like they see that she sees it and that she's coming for it, and they tell him to stay there because like a girl's about to like go down on him basically. And he's like, oh boy, I can't wait for this. And then the gym teacher grabs him in like a Farrelly Brothers move by the cock and balls and holds him as hard as she can and starts yelling for the cops, basically. Like, I know, like, I've got you now. You can't get away. Somebody call the cops. Like, this kid is sticking his dick through a hole. And she holds him and, like, is yanking on it as the other two friends laugh and run away. It's crazy. It's like, I couldn't believe that this scene goes three steps higher than I thought it did based on what the reputation of Porky's was. And I'm going to say, not lazy. Like, it's like what I thought that scene was like, oh, fuck. Like, some guys look at some girls and they don't know, and or they get mad and blah, blah,
well,
blah.
Well, that's
blah.
What I thought we got wrong about the film. This is not I was thinking back about our intro, which to the listeners is about 5 minutes ago, but to us is a while ago. We leaned heavily into the idea that this was, you know, guys went back to the theater to see this over and over again, to see boobs. There's not a lot of that in this film. There's not a lot of that type of exploitation of women in the film. It's there, certainly. And that scene Kaelin's talking about is the scene it happens in.
There are other scenes, too, where they kind of humiliate girls. But
yes, but the movie's filled with feminine exploitation in a ethical and character sense. But in terms of, like, go see all these boobs, it's not that movie, and we kind of got that wrong.
You know what? And also, the important thing to say is you see a penis way before you see boobs.
You see lots of penises before you see boobs.
And that's – I don't know that necessarily is the fucking barometer for like, fairness of exploitation, balance of exploitation. But – it sort of is, because the movie is not – there are a lot of things it does that are 80s-style cruel. I'm not sure on that level of the, like, the teenage boys and the teenage girls that it's particularly misogynistic.
I think we were wrong about that. I think that my expectation of – in the popular culture, or probably what Porky's has become in its sequels, and I guess what American Pie in some ways leaned into – this sense of there's two levels of fun. One is the character fun, and the two is you go to the movie to see girls naked or whatever. It's not doing a lot of that, and it had opportunities to do. They have so many scenes in a strip club, and they don't make use of that in that way. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, when that started happening, I thought, oh, this movie's different than I thought. This is actually sort of a pure pure attempt at like at
puerile.
Yeah, puerile.
It's honest. It's honest and it's, dare I say, sweet in its efforts. I mean, there are things that hold it back from that because it's in the 80s and it's like there's fucked up stuff in the movie that isn't fun fucked up. But I thought that all of the, like, it's weird, man. And I want to talk, what I want to talk most about is like, can you do this anymore? Could you do a movie that is so focused on the male perspective? Does anybody want that right now? But given that this movie already exists, I was like, I'm pretty interested in this. Like, I would like a version of this that sees it from the girl's point of view, who are just as wacky and goofy and sex crazed as the guys, or at least up for it. I would love that, but that doesn't exist. We have Porky's instead. I'm totally into it. I'm pretty happy with this movie.
I'm sort of less happy than you, but I am a lot more curious about it than I thought I would be. And I am interested in this time capsule sense, because in 30 years, the male psyche doesn't change that dramatically. And yet it feels like it has.
And the other thing that I was interested in watching the movie, and the thing that maybe made me like it the best, is it feels like a movie aliens would make about the species known as human males. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about sort of these really, they seem feral. They, like, watching the movie, they seem, I mean, it's a, you know, you could say, like, it's a cliche to say, like, men are like cavemen, you know, they're single-minded or whatever. This felt to me like watching the fucking behavioral patterns of animals. Mm-hmm. It really did. And yeah. I mean, in a comic way, but it was like that. And I was like, this is fucking fascinating. Yeah. And if this is true, and it's not true for me, I don't identify with these guys, I wasn't this kind of sex-crazed teenager, but if it is true, it's super, I'm so glad to have a record of it. Like,
well, it does all the things, and this has to be intentional. It has a subplot about a kid trying to rebel against his abusive father, so he's becoming a man on his own right. I can stand up to my dad myself. That's the big finale of that climax. There's a kid who has to go best this guy who's bested him, and he keeps getting beat up, but he keeps going back to best this guy, because that's what men do. And there's the kid who just wants to get laid, and he's relentless. I would honestly say this may be contentious. Very charming actor. I like that guy.
That the Pee Wee.
Yeah, I kind of liked him.
Me too.
Yeah,
I liked him all.
Oh, really? I thought I was going to be contentious.
No. I thought he was charming. Annoying. But
yeah,
he's,
but in a charming way.
I completely agree.
That's so funny.
I completely agree. Yeah. I actually really liked all the characters.
The cast
in the
is
movie.
Good. Anyway, so it has all these sort of archetypal things that are classic masculine tropes that he's dealing in, and so I know that's intentional. He has all the aspects of masculinity, but all turned up to like 15.
Well, and when I say, was he deconstructing this on any level? Part of what I mean is they play a lot of jokes on each other. Like they're obsessed with pranking each other. It's a constant runner. And so, like, I believe that was true. Like, he thought, you know, him and his friends were into jokes and pranks, right? And sort of embarrassing each other. So one of the first things that happens in the movie, I'm just going to detail this. You want to tell the story real fast?
Yeah. So the movie's about a group of guys. Just think about American Graffiti as like a good template for this. There's a group of like five guys, and the littlest one, nicknamed Pee Wee, he wants to get laid. And there's some pranks at the beginning, and the first act break is like, let's go to Porky's because we can all get laid there. And this is ostensibly a redux of one of the opening scenes where they're going to get everybody laid by this prostitute, and it ends up being a prank. It's not a real thing. And then this other guy's like, well, this place called Porky's, we can go.
Well, wait, can you pause for a second? Yeah. So that's the scene I want to talk about.
I know. So I'll just graze.
So let me just real quick do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So here's the first – one of the first scenes in the movie is they've got eight – 10 guys who are all going to fuck the same prostitute. That's the plan. The way that the two guys have set this plan up. So they come to this house in the middle of the woods, and we're going to bring this hooker named Cherry something. And she's going to fuck all of us in order. And it's just going to be this, you know, one after another assembly line of sex. And so all the guys are like, awesome, this sounds great. So they convince them to stand in the, like, interior, the first room in the cabin, while they go into the bedroom with the hooker. And they say, but before you can come in here, you all have to strip totally naked and stand in this room so that she can inspect you and make sure you don't have venereal disease. And so they're like, well, that sounds weird. And they're like, that, how could she tell? And they're like, well, she's been at this so long, she can just look and know. They're like, okay, we buy that. So all the guys strip completely naked in this room. And the hooker comes in and looks at them all and comments on everybody's penis. And is like, oh, this guy's tweezer dick. Like, this guy's got a little... And they're like, haha. And she's like, this guy's got a crooked dick, haha.
Can I interrupt there real quick?
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about that scene to me is that it's not played for... None of the guys are embarrassed. They're all, like, no. High-fiving and laughing.
I know.
And that's really funny.
I know.
Not funny, haha. It's, like, funny, curious. Like,
I agree with you. This is what I'm talking about. Right, cool. And so she goes through the whole line and then goes into this other room. And the two guys who brought her there, you know, they're up to something, basically. So what you're left with is this room full of naked guys sitting on a bench together, fully naked, excited because they're going to go have sex with this woman, and, like, jumping up and down, giddy. And, like, tell me there isn't heavy homoerotic overtones here or undertones. Like, I think that it's like we're observing them through this strange microscope, which is like they can't even tell that there's sort of some fluid sexuality going on here.
I think you might be reading too much
into it. If he didn't intend it, it's still there.
Okay, I buy that. But I think this was simply the setup to make sure they could all run away naked.
Yes, but it's not shot that way. Like, they aren't, like, there's no... And I don't need this in a movie, and I don't expect that this needs to be true. They don't have to be all, like, no homo or whatever with each other.
Yeah.
But there's so none of that.
You know what? It's not – I would say it's more childish asexuality than it is homosexuality.
Well, I think later there's elements that turn in – the guy who hates the Jewish kid, and I think they're hooking up. I think that's pretty they're really implying an intimacy there.
Yeah, I'm more partial to this argument.
So I think it's kind of there. And it also but the fluid sexuality thing, to me, it's sort of like these are guys who would jerk off together. Like, that's,
yeah, but not in a sexual, they'd be like, it's so fun, we're having such a good time.
You don't see that sort of blurs the line between
I get what you're saying, but I think that the movie is playing it for puerile innocence, not fluid sexuality.
I don't think that the movie is necessarily on to this, and I don't know that Bob Clark is onto this, but you don't shoot a room full of naked guys loving it without considering that's an element that's going on here. I mean, it just, I'm sorry,
no,
it's just like
it.
A big part of the story.
No, I get it's just such a funny conversation to have about Porky's.
But I think it's part of the key to me is like, okay, these guys are, this is like, this is pretty open about the reality of their sexual experience and sexual interest.
I think we're looking at it through a modern lens, and I don't think that that's necessarily on anyone's brain.
Well, can I tell you, before you go back to the plot, part of the reason I'm on about this is...
I should mention that Kaylin and I are recording this podcast naked.
Totally naked.
Sorry, we should have opened by saying that that's the case.
Is the movie that it maybe reminded me most of, and is Everybody Wants Some, the Richard Linklater movie that just came out, which is about college guys on a baseball team who just want to hook up. That's what they want to do. They play baseball and they're into that, and they're really into competition, but mostly they want to go score and get girls. And it was like, I was watching Porky's and I was like, oh, like, this is very similar. And that movie, it's the same. It's like when you put together a group almost entirely consisting of men who want to spend all their time together, but the conquest, the goal is sex with women, that stuff just gets very murky. And I found that movie, it's the same as Porky's. It doesn't go into it in any kind of depth, or they don't really acknowledge it. No guys go off and kiss or anything. But there's a comfort to their homoeroticism.
I bet Richard Linklater was aware of it, and I bet Bob Clark wasn't, is my guess.
Maybe. But what's the difference?
It just feels, I mean, it's just a matter of what we bring to it. And I think that the difference is one was filmed 30 years later. That's the big difference, honestly, to me, is that there's a sense of, in the 80s, I think, you know, that these kids are having a good time. It's just fun. And they're going to go get naked. Part of having sex with a girl is you get naked. Okay, we'll do that. And then it pays off because they all run around down the street naked. And that's the funny thing is, we got your clothes and you're running away. And yeah, of course, it's impossible if there's a room full of naked men together who are in high school. Of course, there's homosexual overtones, but, like, I don't think any of that's played or amped or necessarily intentional.
Can I tell you, this is, I'm going to sound like such a fucking weird person, but you know, the other stuff it reminded me of?
What?
Is like Italian, 70s Italian movies, like Pasolini movies and Fellini movies, where they, it's the, it's, and to your point, it's charred, it's mostly youth having fun with sexy times.
Jesus, you've never sounded
like,
older.
You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of naked dudes and there's a lot of naked girls and they're running around, especially Pasolini's movie. He made this thing called The Trilogy of Life, where he did three films based on the Decameron, Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, and Arabian Nights. And they're just excuses to have skits about sex. And he intentionally shot them in this crude way where they're poorly framed. They aren't set up well. The acting is amateur. There's no apparent artistic guiding hand, and that is the art of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like they use bad flat fast motion when people have sex. It's like wacky screwball bullshit, and yet it clearly possesses all of these things. And Pasolini was a gay artist who was doing these things in sort of this liberated sense of political act of, you know, the freedom of sexuality. I am not saying Porky's does any of that, but it sits in the fucking same space because that stuff is so present. And I'm even more interested in a movie that doesn't know it's doing all of those.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't think that Bob Clark, I think, again, there's this distinction between authorial intent and sort of execution here, but I think his angle was what you said initially, this is what I believe, is that he's like, American Graffiti is a whitewashed version of male youth. I'll give you the real version.
Right.
And it's going to be funny because we were funny. Me and my friends were so funny. We played so many jokes and there was hot chicks. And you know what? Some of the coaches were in on it. And it was just like, these are dudes. I'm going to show you the real thing about dudes, but it's going to be a really funny take.
I loved that the coaches were into their own bullshit.
Yeah.
Their own sex bullshit.
Anyway, so here's the plot. It's very, very simple. They go to Porky's. They want to have sex with some women, some dancers, some prostitutes there. And they talk to Porky, who's like this 6'6" massive fat guy who gets fat shamed a lot also, a la Flight of the Navigator. And
yeah, but that's not the problematic fat shaming.
No, it's not. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
semi-problematic fat shaming.
No, come on. He's a big fat jerk. He's like, an that's asshole. The joke. That's who he is.
I would say semi-problematic.
He named himself Porky. He's not, there's no shame here. The movie is called Porky's. And the sign, the neon sign on his establishment are two pigs fucking.
I had a big problem with it. It felt offensive to me.
I feel sad for Porky.
No, I felt bad for this guy. He really gets it in this movie. What if I saw this whole movie through Porky's lens and I was like,
sympathetic.
This is a real shit show of a movie about this poor guy who just wants to make a living in a small town with not a lot of economic opportunity. And he sets up the one thing he knows how to do, which to run a brothel. And these poor fucking jerk kids come knock his building down.
Oh, my God.
So, okay. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the kids go, and Porky's like, okay, cool, give me some money, and then go in this room. And then this room, by the way, this is a hyper-real, and I asked Kaylin during the film, I'm like, in the history of the world, has there ever been a building filled with people like this in real life? And
God,
the answer has
so.
It has to be no. Anyway, so they go in this dark room, he pulls a lever, the floor opens up and dumps these dumb kids into the water, and they're like, oh, Porky got us. So,
and they're really mad.
They're real mad. I mean, because he took their money. So the movie progresses, one of the kids goes back over and over again to sort of have it out with Porky. Oh, also, I should mention that the cops come and the kid's like, hey, this guy stole our money. The cop busts one of their taillights and goes, hey, that's $25 for a busted taillight. And he starts fucking
with
the car.
What you find out is that there's two towns that are right next to one another. One where they come from and the one where Porky's is this sort of darker kind of shadow town.
And they hate the preppy yuppie kids from Angel City.
Yeah, and Porky's brother is the sheriff. So when they go to the cops and say, hey, Porky just stole our money and dumped us in the lake, the guy's like, oh really? And he breaks their taillights.
He's like, now you owe us more money. Anyway,
so
the movie then progresses and it's a bunch of skits and gags and hijinks interspersed with this growing sense that they have to get back at Porky and give him his comeuppance. There's this aforementioned subplot amongst the group, but one of the kids is trying to go to Princeton, so there's a college thing going on. there is this anti-Semite thing going on. There's the kid who is fighting with his dad. He always shows up with bruises on his face and lacerations because his dad beats the shit out of him. Once because he ran from a quote-unquote, you know, N-word, and how dare you, so he beat the shit out of him then. And then this kid gets in a fight with the Jewish kid and gets his ass kicked, and his dad beats him up again, saying, hey, you got in a fight with a Jew and you lost. So this is all going on amidst hijinks and, you know, pranks with girls and looking through the holes in the wall, and Kim Cattrall has this
I was really curious if you were going to save that for later.
Well, I want to sidebar it, but I just want to mention here in the summary that Kim Cattrall has a 10-minute sequence deserves its own section. And then they go back and they have this really intricate, crazy plot to get Porky, and they tear Porky's down, and then that's it. That's it.
Yeah. Skits is right. It's Skits. It's just a chain of silly
and Pee-wee gets laid at the end.
And I will say, even though I liked the movie, for a 98 minute movie, it felt 99 hours long.
Yeah, I was shocked when you paused it at one point. I was like, I cannot believe it's only been an hour.
Yeah, because there is no. It's that old thing that we talk about where there is no story going on. There's no progression of story. You're not waiting for anything in particular to happen, and so you're just totally adrift.
Doesn't American Graffiti feel like it moves faster?
American Graffiti has a far better structure, which is one night.
Yeah,
and it's sort of by the end of the night, Richard Dreyfuss and Ron Howard have to decide if they're going to college.
Yeah, it just feels like you're.
I mean, look. American Graffiti is a far better constructed film.
I mean, arguably.
You don't think so?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Obviously it is.
It's just, in every way, it's more professional. But, I'm curious to watch it again now that I've seen Porky's. This sounds fucking crazy. I really wonder if I'd like it as much. Because I'm far less interested in the kind of clean nostalgia that George Lucas was using toward his own success.
Well, here's the thing, and maybe I'm misremembering this. It's been a while since I've seen American Graffiti, but my memory of it is that American Graffiti is about kids on the cusp of adulthood making decisions and trying to sort their lives out, whereas Porky's is about boys.
Yes.
It's a different thing.
But they're the same age. They're exactly the same
age. But they're coming at it. I mean, Porky's is about boys. In some ways,
shouldn't they both be about boys? Aren't they both about that?
Yeah, but in my memory, American Graffiti one of the reasons it feels whitewashed is it's trying to be about humans, right? Not just masculinity. Porky's is about masculinity. American Graffiti is about kids becoming adults, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that feels like an important distinction to me.
Sure.
Let's talk about Kim Cattrall.
Okay. This is quite a sequence. So one of the things I like about the movie is that the adults are just it's not like Animal House where it's like the kids are against the institution, against the dean or whatever. The adults in this movie are crazy. They're all up for the same kind of psychotic sort of rambunctious fun that the kids are. So the role models are lunatics and sex crazed, you know, sort of fun loving people, with some exceptions, who are the bad people, you know, are the ones who are ugly and who don't like sex and who are fat. And that's the worst parts of the movie, are that they are really mean to certain people who don't see the world the way they do. But the ones who do see the world the way they do include the gym teachers, you know, some of the other teachers, I guess, the cops in their town, let them do whatever they want because they were those kids once and they still kind of appreciate that kind of mentality, sophomoric mentality. So, all that to say, there's a sequence where one of the assistant gym teachers is talking to one of the senior gym teachers. There's a lot of gym teachers in the movie. Most of the school scenes take place in gym.
I would say all of, there's no classroom scenes, are there?
Yeah, that's
fine. It's all gym scenes. Yeah,
it's all gym. Yeah, they're always in the gym.
Locker rooms or basketball courts.
Yeah. And so you get to know the coaches of the boys and the coaches of the girls pretty well. And this one young coach, who we find out is only 23 years old, which is interesting, is talking to the older coach, who's maybe 40-something. And he's talking about how hot one of the assistant girls gym coaches is. And she's Kim Cattrall. She wears really short little skirts.
And bends over and way bends too over often.
Crazy. Yeah.
A lot of mouth.
So he's like, man, she's so hot. And the older gym teacher howls. He keeps going, mm-hmm. Oh,
no. Her he name goes, is Lassie. Yeah, he goes, Lassie. Why? And he goes, why do you call her Lassie? And then he howls.
Yeah, he goes.
And then he goes.
And he's like, she's not ugly. She's not a dog. Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, why don't you take her up to the upstairs, like locker room, like storage room, and find out what I'm talking about? Just take her up there.
You've tipped the joke, Kaylin.
Says that early on.
For four times, he goes, "You sure she's still a virgin?" And the guy's like, "Yeah, she's a virgin." Like that's the lead up. Is like
he tells him to take her up there so long before he takes her up there, yeah. And then he keeps saying Lassie.
I think three or four different lead ups throughout the film of him calling her Lassie and howling and asking if she's still a virgin.
And the joke does not evolve from that.
No. It just keeps happening over and over again.
And the guy's like, "Yes, I'm sure she's a virgin." God damn. Like, I don't know why he thinks that, honestly.
I don't know.
I guess she told him that.
That's funny.
I don't know. So anyway, so the payoff of it all is he finally takes her up there. And when she gets up there, she smells the smell of male locker room. So she gets sort of like doused in pheromones. And she's like, "I don't know what happens to me. Every time I smell this smell, I get like so worked up and I get so turned on." And he's like, "Oh, you do?" And she's like, "Yes." So then she starts tearing at his, and she said, like, "I don't want to go all the way with you." Like, she's already said that to him. But when she's in this room, she can't fucking stop. She can't, she's feeling the power of
whatever. The sweaty gym shirts.
Yeah. And so she strips him and he strips her and they start to have sex on a pile of gym clothes. And then why don't you take it, Travis?
Nope. I've been dying for you to finish the story.
Well, what do you think happens, folks? So he's having sex with her. And she's really into it. And then she starts, like, getting a look on her face.
Do it.
I'm building up to it. I'm not just going to just do it. Like, the movie doesn't just do it, Travis. It makes you wait in hype or high and anticipation. Mm-hmm. So she's, like, getting a look on her face. He's like, "Whoa, she's really into it. Oh, my God, this is the greatest sex I've ever had." And then she starts going.
I can't look at you.
She goes. And he's like, "Whoa, what is going on?" Yeah. And then she goes, like that. Howls like that for 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10.
He goes on for. Ever. And the guy's like, back, "Jesus Christ, stop howling."
It cuts back to the gym and everyone hears it. And then it cuts back to them. And then he puts a dirty sock in her mouth. And
my God, you're getting. But by the time he puts a sock in her mouth, it's been 4.5 minutes. And it keeps showing everybody in the world reacting to her howling. And the other gym guy who called her Lassie can't stop laughing.
You can't believe how long it is. You can't believe how long the sequence is. Because, I mean, at one point when it was probably 3 minutes past when we thought it could not go any further,
yeah.
I asked Kaylin, "How much longer the sequence? Call it right now."
And I guess 30 seconds.
I think you said 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
Another 4 minutes.
It went on for so much longer. It's
crazy.
And the reason that we're belaboring this is because it doesn't make any fucking sense. Mm-hmm. Like, what the payoff is that she, whenever she has sex or orgasms, it's not orgasming. I mean, I guess it is. She howls like a wolf.
Yeah.
That's the joke, yeah, which is not a joke. It's like totally surreal. It doesn't really make any sense.
You know something interesting, though? Let me segue to an interesting point about this film from this moment. Because I knew some of the guys who worked with the Jackass crew, and one of the things that they're very meticulous about is if you see someone get hit in the ball in the balls, it's not funny. But if you see someone get hit in the balls and you see people in scene laughing at that, it is funny. They've discovered this through trial and error of doing this for years and years and years. And part of it is it's the release of he's probably fine, his friends are laughing, so it excuses the idea that he might be seriously injured. And two, there's a joy at watching other people laugh at things, and it sort of sucks you into the moment. This movie is obsessed with people laughing.
Yes, that's a great point.
It's real. There's so many scenes where the joke really is that guy's laughing so hard.
Yes.
And I'll be honest, it kind of made me laugh sometimes. Yeah. Like when there's a moment where
but it's constructed in a way, and I say constructed intentionally, where that is obviously the focus.
Yeah.
Like it's focus of the scene.
Yeah, that's the funny part is that guy's laughing so hard. Like there's a moment where Beulah Ballbreaker, the one who grabbed the penis through the hole in the wall, her subplot becomes she gets obsessed with the idea that there's a mole on this guy's penis. And she's like, I can, I can identify him. I just need a lineup or something. Like, I need to see this guy's dick again so I can prove to you that he's going to mold it.
So and, she's trying. So the scene is, it's one shot.
Yeah.
It's one shot.
One lock off.
A full take.
Yeah.
Of her trying to convince the principal, who's an old sort of fuddy-duddy man, that she wants a lineup of boys so she can look at all of their penises.
And say, this is the one I grabbed.
And the old principal's like not having it. So it, she's just talking and talking and trying to convince him.
And I grant you that that's a kind of comedic setup. Right. And but the jokes in the scene are all really bad. Like one of the jokes is the principal says, can we call them tallywhackers? And you're yeah. like, ugh, give me a break. But in the center of the scene between yes. Beulah and the principal are two boys who are involved and they're laughing so hard.
No, the gym teachers. They're the gym teachers.
Oh, I didn't even get that. That's
they're the gym teachers again. It's those guys.
Oh my God.
It's everywhere. All three of the gym teachers are in the back because this is where it happened. And so right, they're in the room right. for this conversation.
They're laughing so hard.
And again, this scene is infinitely long.
Six minutes. It goes on forever.
And the whole entire focus is that they can't stop laughing.
Yeah. And it made me laugh.
Yeah, me too.
So
because it kept going and going. And then they start making jokes, which also are not great jokes, but it is, they're in a fucking suck zone hole of laughter where everything anybody says is funny.
Yeah, you've been there before. But the movie does that a lot. It's other people reveling in the pranks. And because they think things are so funny, you kind of get tricked into thinking things are so funny.
Well, and it's not tricky, though, because what's funny about all of that is I was amazed. And again, I always have to couch this because there are moments that are contradictory to this. But I was amazed at how not cruel their laughter was. People are not being mean.
It's never cruel.
In this situation and the Kim Cattrall situation, they aren't laughing at Kim Cattrall, really. And they're not even really laughing at the guy who's having sex with her. They've set up a funny situation. Or they're watching a funny situation that they can't stop laughing at, and I mean it's a small difference, but I found that this movie didn't make me feel sick ever.
No,
because it wasn't mean, or it didn't think it was being mean. You know what I mean? It was like innocent in a
the
weird
racist
way.
Parts hit me weird.
Well, the racist parts aren't. You're not supposed to laugh at.
No,
them.
I know, but like I'm just trying to think through the whole movie. There's parts that I thought I was uncomfortable with, and. Those parts.
You were uncomfortable with the racist parts?
So something felt real. First of all, being from Louisiana, the N-word always makes my stomach curl just because I even used in sort of period pieces, it just hits me in a weird space.
If you watch this as a pure comedy, that stuff is very bizarre. And I didn't even tell people the payoff of the guys sitting naked in a room scene, which is that here's the prank.
Oof.
This is going to make you feel weird. And it is weird, and I'm really conflicted on whether this is good or not. And I think it might be. It's just I'll just tell you what happens. So they're in the room, sitting there naked, waiting to go have sex with this hooker. And the two guys who are in there, who are pulling the prank, have secretly let in a really big black guy.
A guy they hired. They found
they
him.
Paid
and
him.
Paid him.
They found
him,
like
the scariest guy they could.
And they said yeah, and they describe him in racist terms in terms of how black he is. And the prank is that they are going to start screaming when they're supposedly having sex with the woman. So she's making orgasm sex noises, and they're making orgasm sex noises. And the black guy in the room is laughing hysterically because he knows that this prank is going to be so good. And they then start screaming, saying, like, what are you doing here? And the black guy starts yelling, like, how dare you fuck my girl, basically.
They've set it up as long as her husband doesn't come home,
yeah.
like, you'll be fine, you know.
And so then they hear a struggle. The naked guys in the room are hearing all this, and it sounds like there's a fight. And then they hear really death-curdling screaming, and one of the guys comes in with fake blood spread across his chest and neck. And then the black guy walks out wielding a giant, like, hatchet.
Yeah.
Basically.
Machete.
And he's like a machete. And he's like looking at all those guys being like, oh, I'm going to kill you next. And all the naked guys run out of the room. It's a very, I hate to say this, it's very complex because I don't quite know where the laser of the joke is. I'm not willing to say the joke is haha black guy because it seems intentionally period. It's like, think about the era that this is in. where this would be something they think is funny. It's fucking really, it's just really weird.
Yeah, the laser is that they're going to scare these guys after they take their clothes and have them run out naked. The mechanism is, what's the scariest thing to a young white high school student is a big
in
black guy.
In the 50s.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's parts like that that really...
But again, the movie approaches that as if it's an innocent thing. It isn't. It's loaded with problems and sort of sick elements. But the characters don't know that. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that I sort of accepted it as a scene is like, and found it somewhat interesting is like, huh, like this says something odd about race relations, which is the way I also felt about the Jewish thing. I actually really valued the Jewish plot line because I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, that's right. Like America was wildly anti-Semitic.
It was cool. It was just a weird thing to put in Porky's. I would never have expected there was a dramatic racial reconciliation subplot in Porky's.
Yeah.
It was very surprising to me.
Yeah, which is not like, that's the thing that differentiates this so dramatically from like American Pie and anything that came after it. Is again, there's, you know, we talked during the Brave Little Toaster about little clues that there's something just a little bit off center or a little bit more interesting going on, and those things felt that way to me, where I was like, I am being told, at least myself, that there may be something worth looking at a little bit more closely here, and that he may be up to something a little bit more interesting.
I think he thought he was doing something of worth and note. I think he's trying to make a funny movie, this is not just a ball busting slap your knee comedy. He's trying to at least do something that's like holistic about his high school experience,
right?
I would say it is obviously loaded with weird masculine misogyny moments, but like in some ways, if that's his experience, fair enough.
See, that's the thing and that's what I wanted to bring it back to. Yeah. Is are we beyond the point where that is an interesting subject? And I know that, you know, there are movies that do it with far more tact. But
you
if
mean
we're
modern
just,
day?
Yes.
Okay.
If because Porky's, I'm interested in it for reasons that I don't think 99.9% of people would be interested in it for, or would ever watch it for. I'm seeing it almost as a archive of the 50s and the 80s kind of packed into one little thing.
Yeah, I think that's why people like it, man. I think I like it because it's a snapshot of that that take on its own brand of masculinity and what it was like to be a high school student. Obviously exacerbated and obviously exaggerated, but I think that snapshot of what masculinity looked like to some people at that moment is fascinating. And I think that's why people would find it fascinating today or interesting. I think that...
But do you think you could make a movie like that?
No, but could you make a movie about males in high school struggling with their masculinity? Yeah, of course.
Would you have to signal to people that you know that that's the subject that you're tackling? Is that the difference?
No, I just think it'd be a radically different thing. I think that it's a lot, in some ways, a lot more complicated now to be a high school male. And I think that becomes a lot more interesting to talk about. I mean, there's sections of Moonlight that deal with that straight up, you know? Right. Like, you can do movies like that today, I think. It just be, it feels so different.
But Moonlight is so explicit about what it's about. I guess the thing that I liked about Porky's is it feels sincerely and honestly poured out of the brain of somebody experiencing that time.
Yeah.
Like that's, and when
I do
say,
believe that.
Yeah, it does. And it feels like, okay, Bob Clark experienced this, even though these events obviously didn't happen. This is what it felt like to be a sex obsessed high school kid in Louisiana in the 50s. Yeah. Felt like this. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. I honestly didn't. And I mean, that sounds silly because it's a dumb sex comedy. And of course you can reduce, you know, teenage males to sex obsessed people, but like this feels honest somehow.
Yeah,
like poured out of the brain.
It does feel honest. It does feel honest. It really, really does. I also want to point out, just cause I think it's relevant, that three different times in the movie, three different characters do this. They beat their chest and howl like Tarzan.
Yeah.
This is really weird. Yeah. This is a really weird thing.
It's totally weird.
But like, once I was like, that's weird, but okay. And then it happens two more times, meaning he thought that was like a good expression of masculine conquering.
I mean, look, think about when it, if that's probably, he probably remembers that vividly because that's not so long after the Johnny Weissmuller Tarzan movies, yeah. which were a huge deal. They probably saw them as kids.
Yeah, we're men.
Yeah, and we so they're probably thing. Literally doing Tarzan. I mean, oh, in a way.
Oh, I know, for sure.
Yeah, and oh, so in sure. a way that we certainly don't anymore. And so like that kind of thing, that kind of, that's interesting, man. That kind of expression of dominant
that's
male.
That's the stuff I'm interested yeah. in is like, because now males in high school, I think, have different expressions of dominance because those biological urges of pecking orders, establishing dominance, of fighting with your peers, of doing pranks, of conquering women sexually, all these things that
yeah.
biologically men have struggled with over the course of millennia, those are all still there. They just sort of parse themselves out. In the 40s were different than the 50s, were different than the 60s. Yeah. And every generation is having its own way of dealing with it. And I think now it's obviously very, very different. So to see that was...
You know, really you just connected something to for me that I didn't really understand until you started saying it, which is it's sort of why would a filmmaker in the 80s look back to the 50s? And the similarities between the 50s and the 80s make like that parallel makes tons of sense to me in a way that in the 80s you couldn't look back to the 60s, you couldn't really look back
well,
to the
70s. Well, we found this time and time and time again, man. The we've seen this, the 50s and 80s have a parallel, and the 60s and the 90s have
yeah.
a parallel,
yeah,
and the early 70s and 90s, I should say.
Yes,
we keep seeing this because they were not necessarily geopolitically equivalent, but they were cultural revolution wise equivalent.
Wow, that's so fucking interesting.
Hard penis. Sorry. Fucking interesting.
No, the 80s 50s thing is staring at us in the face in Porky's, but that applies to so many of the 80s movies we've watched.
Well, we listen, the last couple of podcasts we've done, we've come up against this in terms of the idea of Trainspotting or these yeah. anti-rebellion 80s movies. And I think that's
well, early 90s 70s. Reactions to the 80s, yeah, which are the 90s, yeah, which yeah. feel like 70s movies. I mean, yeah. the indie movies of the 70s and the indie movies of the 90s are not so far apart.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That would be why. So well, there's just, about 20 years.
We're going to track this in our podcast. This is our new theme.
We're 2016 right now, yeah. 2017. About so we should to be looking oh, now, at the, so this is an 80s year. Yeah. Guess who's about to be president? So we got to wait 10 years to get back to the 70s, 90s cycle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a revolt coming up. But it'll be fun.
Well, like did I just get that wrong? Yeah, we're 20 years out of the 90s. Never mind. That just collapsed.
Can I just say, while you're doing the math, I glazed over and I got the basic idea of what you're saying. And I was like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Totally
there'll be some
wrong.
Sort of cultural revolt and we'll go back
well,
to these types
of movies.
Well,
let's just say the science suggests we're in an 80s cycle, regardless of how much time has passed.
Can we do less math on this podcast?
We need
just
to.
More movies?
You can't imagine how many times I've listened to our show and realized we got the years wrong and like just did our math wrong.
Yeah.
It's a constant.
Let's draw a movie. Anyway, watch Porky's, don't watch Porky's.
I mean, if we listen to the conversation, if that sounds like something you want to see, go see it. I like it. I would watch it again.
I've thought about it more than I expected to, and I'm more intrigued by it than I expected to be. I'm specifically intrigued by the way we got it wrong, because I bet you most people think what we thought about this going right. in, like, oh, it's just a chance for kids.
Well,
to
it was
see
a movie that was
and...
that was mocked when it came. I mean, it has like I looked on. It's not really equivalent, but I looked at Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like at 30% or something.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm
this
sure critics
hated
this, right?
This has not been a rediscovered classic. This is not one that people return to, I don't think.
Yeah. It's more interesting than you think, especially because he's trying to do something, you know, meaningful, I think, and honest.
Yeah.
In a way.
And
that
once
I was
again, Bob Clark, guy who invents the teenage sex comedy, and his original movie is a lot better than what came after. Just like he invented the slasher genre, his first movie is fantastic, and the slasher movies that came out are not.
Bob Clark, way to go!
Nice
All right,
job, Bob Clark.
Kaylin, go.
I'm going to pick a new movie.
Oh, also, please don't forget, everyone. Please tell a friend about this podcast.
Oh yeah.
Nice. Please post about it, and if you have a favorite episode, send that episode to your friend and say, "Hey, check out this rad."
You will not
thing.
Believe what they said about Porky's.
Yeah, maybe don't send this episode. I don't know.
Think why not?
Yeah,
The next movie we're going to watch. It's interesting.
Well, you're not excited about it.
I'm excited about it.
You're nonplussed.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to tell you what it is.
Great. That's a great idea.
It's an important figure. from the 80s and 90s. A very important comedic figure from the 80s and 90s, and a very important comedic filmmaker from the 80s and 90s. Can you guess who it might be?
Adam Sandler?
Wrong. The movie is Uncle Buck.
Oh, I'm actually really into that.
Yeah?
John Candy is one of my favorites.
Great.
Okay, so join us next week for Uncle Buck on...
When we find out if Uncle Buck sucks.
Whatever. Does your favorite.
Movie Uncle Buck.
Suck. Uncle Buck.